We're going to read this morning from Canto 3, chapter 27, verses 3 and 4. We already covered 1 and 2. Understanding material nature, Samkhya philosophy. The purpose of that analytical study is distinguishing matter and spirit, identification with spirit, detachment from matter, purifying the mind, fixing the mind upon the Supreme Lord, and engaging in his undivided devotional service. So that's naturally accomplished, we've been hearing, through devotional service, Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojata Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Chayata Haitakam. One who is situated like that, we heard this nice metaphor and discussed it 2 days in a row. The sun doesn't move. It doesn't change, although the reflection of the sun on the water surface does move, and the reflection does change. So the soul that's transcendentally situated in consciousness isn't affected by the ever-changing material circumstances. So that avikara is one word that we looked at, and akartritvat, not doing anything, the non-doer, and specifically no engagement in sense gratification, specifically. Akartritvat means not doing anything for sense gratification, which means, conversely, the soul does something. The soul exists, the soul has a positive existence, and it does things. But it doesn't do it. The realized soul, the transcendental position of the soul, is not involved in matter or material enjoyment or fruitive activities or sense enjoyment. So then text 2 is the default position. If that's not there, that transcendental consciousness is not there, then one becomes implicated, influenced by false ego, thinking that he is the proprietor of everything. And that's not exactly in the conventional sense of proprietorship, like, you know, this is my house, or this is my computer, or these are my shoes. But in a subtler sense of being the cause of the result, the ownership of the activity, ownership of the result of the activity. So it's a subtle sense of acting through false ego, and thus false proprietorship. So one is subjected to that false proprietorship, and then one owns the karmic reaction. And what we're going to hear this morning is whether the karmic reaction takes you up or down. Karmic reaction is implicating one in fruitive activities. Another example is a piece of wood floating on the ocean. As the wave goes up, the wood goes up. As the waves go down, the wood goes down. But it's completely subjected to the movements of the ocean. Similarly, the good and bad notion, you know, good activity, bad charity, philanthropy, altruism, motive goodness type of activities are also implicating. And the word that's being used here is contaminating, or there's contamination. that, you know, the soul is implicated or dirty, covered, not in its pure state, not in this other metaphor, the sun reflected on the water, it's in the water, or implicated in material nature. So the modes of nature that are influencing the soul, which has nothing to do with the modes of nature, like a disease state. So by that paucity or weakness of spiritual consciousness, one's implicated. One becomes then the creator of one's own destiny, good and bad and mixed. And material existence continues perpetually, conceivably perpetually. It's a question sometimes that people contemplate, is the living entity for certain, for sure and certain, one day, one fine day, going to become liberated? And the answer is no. There's no certainty. One can go on endlessly, even if it's not where we belong. We can go on endlessly. So it's not just hang around long enough and it's going to get better. There's a change of consciousness that's needed, and then the position of the living entity can change and ultimately extricated or liberated or fixed in transcendence. So this verse, this is a quiz question, Bhagavad Gita quiz question. The question is, what verse in Bhagavad Gita resembles this verse to a T, or very, very closely? Here's the verse. Tena saṃsāra padavīṃ avaśo vyeti anirvṛtaḥ prasaṅgikā karma doṣai sad asan miśra yonishu. Translation: the conditioned soul, therefore, transmigrates into different species of life, higher and lower, because of his association with the modes of material nature. Unless he is relieved of material activities, he has to accept this position because of his faulty work, karma doshai. You raising your hand?
Huh? I thought you asked.
I did ask, and so you want to reply?
It's karma.
Please?
Karanam gunasangasya.
Can you say the whole verse? Purusha prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunan karanam gunasangasya sad asad yoni janmasu. That's Bhagavad Gita chapter 13, text 22. What's chapter 13 is Sankhya, as is this section, Sankhya. The parts of Bhagavad Gita that are Sankhya are three. That's the initial instructions that Krishna gives in chapter 2. There's a few verses in chapter 7 where Krishna is analyzing the Bina Prakritir Ashtada, the eight material elements, and besides them, the spiritual potency, Para Prakriti, and Krishna is the source of both. Just those three verses, and then most of chapter 13, again, Sankhya. So, 13:22 translates. The living entity, in material nature, thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of material nature. This is due to its association with that material nature. Thus, he meets with good and evil among various species. Sadasad yoni janmasu. Sadasad yoni janmasu. Here, is sad asan mishra yonishu. The mix of good and bad. Good, bad, and mixed. So we receive the good and bad and mixed as a result of our involvement in karma doshai, faulty work. And the faulty work, specifically, we'll hear in the purport, that it's directing one's attention to the potential of being the enjoyer of the fruits of the work, a fruit of work, and even good fruit of work, mode of goodness fruit of work, or karmakanda yagyas, and performing rituals for material elevation. It's karma doshai. Although it's Vedic, karma doshai. And far greater in number than people who are performing karmakanda rituals is people who teach and value and, you know, expect spiritual people to do philanthropy. So many. Just one. I was in Mayapur, little anecdotal thing. I was in Mayapur attending, can't remember what it was, attending something. And, you know how they have in Mayapur that those long rows of where you sit down and take prasadam. So, I think I was late for the regular prasadam, so I sat down just along with everybody else. And one man, you know, a guest, a visitor, kind of a little judgmental and haughty in his tone, said, so, you know, here he is in Mayapur, seeing all what Mayapur is saying, what do you do to help people? And don't tell me, before I spoke, and don't tell me that you're giving people knowledge. What are you doing to help people? So I gave him the answer that he wanted. Oh, that's very good. You're feeding people. But then I added, you know, please don't think that the identity of the living being is matter, and helping people is improving their material condition. You know, if you have that idea of that, that's what it means to help people, you have a very limited idea of what it means to help people. Well, if they don't have food, then how can they learn this knowledge? And, you know, all those kind of nice things. So here's Prabhupada's purport. Here the word karma doshai means, quote, by faulty actions. This refers to any activity, good or bad, performed in this material world. They are all contaminated. Faulty actions because of material association. And material association means identifying with, not just being here, but identifying with and trying to be the enjoyer of. That's guna sangha. Because we can be here and not associate with. We can be a transcendentalist. The foolish conditioned soul may think that he is offering charity by opening hospitals for material benefit or by opening an educational institution for material education, but he does not know that all such work is also faulty because it will not give him relief from the process of transmigration from one body to another. It is clearly stated here, sad asan mishra yonashu. This means that one may take birth in a very high family, or he may take his birth in higher planets among the demigods, for his so-called pious activities in the material world, but this work is also faulty because it does not give liberation. To take birth in a nice place or a high family does not mean that one avoids undergoing the material tribulations of the pangs of birth, death, old age, and disease. A conditioned soul, under the spell of material nature, cannot understand that any action he performs for sense gratification is faulty, and that only his activities in devotional service to the Lord can give him release from the reaction of faulty activities. Really simple. I mean, very simple. Because he does not cease such faulty activities, he has to change to different bodies, some high and some low. That is called samsara padavim, which means this material world from which there is no release. One who desires material liberation has to turn his activities to devotional service. There is no alternative. This is our free will choice. It's not unlimited, it's limited. And, you know, in a way that Prabhupada has said this, we can choose to act in our relationship with Krishna, or we can choose to not act in our relationship with Krishna. And this is describing, you know, material nature, how material nature works. That's the title of the chapter. And it implicates one in bondage and up and down. Sad, asad, mishra, yonishu. Yonishu, birth, in higher and lower positions. And that's not only the lower is faulty, the higher is faulty. That's the point. Transcendence is the message. Krishna speaks same in Bhagavad Gita. Trigunya Vishaya Veda Nishtrigunya Bhavarjuna. The Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. Rise above them. But supposing one doesn't get that message, then one is implicated in faulty activity. That's the verse. Text 4. Actually, living entity is transcendental to material existence. What is it? This is a verse in Bhagavad Gita also. Ajopi san avyayatma bhutanami sharopi san. But because of his mentality of lording and over material nature, his material existential condition does not cease. Just as in a dream, he is affected by all sorts of disadvantages. It's similar, almost the same. We're implicating ourselves in disadvantages, thinking this is better and this is worse. Very much like, you know, from one in the material position, one man's food is another man's poison. You've heard that phrase. One man's food is another man's poison. So, some like this, and some like that. When I was little, I don't know what it's connected to, but there's a little nursery rhyme. Some like it hot, some like it cold, some like it in the pot 3 days old. Mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. And, you know, to somebody this is good, and to another person that's bad, and this is good. And from the transcendentalists, it's all faulty. And as long as one does not take shelter of the transcendental position by some descending mercy coming into one's life, then one is implicated in, you know, this all sorts of disadvantages in a big broad stroke. All sorts of disadvantages are what one has to endure. Prabhupada in the purport, rather than reading the purport, he gives the example of a dream. And in the dream, we can dream so many things. And it's just a state of mind, and according to your state of mind, you have a dream. And in the dream, you experience, you know, something, some happiness and some distress. His favorite, one of his favorite examples is the king you dream. Your king sitting on a throne, happy. And into the royal assembly comes a lion, and oh, one is fearful. And then you wake up and you weren't a king and there's no lion. It's a state of mind. And according to the state of mind, there's happiness and distress. Neither of them are real. And from an absolute platform, it's distress. Because there's forgetfulness of who we really are. And our, who we really are and our relationship with the Supreme. That's happiness. Happiness of a loving relationship with the Supreme. This is a world of forgetfulness with its multiple disadvantages, which is exactly the language of the verse. Anartha is the Sanskrit. Something unwanted. We want happiness and we get something unwanted. Yehi samsparsha jabhoga dukha yunayivate. We want happiness and we get distress. That's how it works. So this analysis of within the Sankhya system teaches us this. Then what? So now we know what we didn't know. Then what? So the devotional service is the conclusion. Sankhya, done properly, leads one to devotional service. Sankhya, done improperly, leads one to an impersonal position. Impersonalist like Sankhya also. But no bhakti, no Bhagavan. The frustrating position of material existence is understood. Vita raga bhaya krodha, a verse from Bhagavad Gita. Out of frustration, this is a miserable place. Let me make it zero. Nullify it. But there's no shelter there. One needs the shelter of the true identity of the soul. That's disclosed in the Bhagavatam pages. Any discussion on this topic? Mahamantra?
Is that I'm
sometimes people think, yeah, that's what I need. Yeah, really, I'm going through this. That's what I need. And then when I show them versus their life, and then I go further to pursue them, invite them, they say, I don't think that's for me. So how shall I approach? Like, this is my thing.
It depends. Purity is something that can always be attended to and enriched and, you know, valued, worked on. That you can do anyways. And whether to pursue or how to pursue or etc. depends. Being another's well-wisher can take so many different forms depending on so many variables. You know, one's own capacity, the situation, their circumstance, timing, you know, so many things. The ground, the unchanging foundation is working on one's own purity, physician, heal thyself, and being a well-wisher. No. Who are we? We're entangled in material complexity ourselves. So it's not a condescending well-wisher. It's a Vaishnav quality. And that in and of itself, you know, how that manifests, that's a foundational starting point, and how that manifests depends on so many variables. You have something?
Happiness and distress keep coming and going. Mm-hmm. And the tendency of the conditioned soul would be to say, okay, anyhow the happiness is going to come. So I will just hang on for some time and the happiness comes. But the initial stages also...
Who thinks like that? I don't know people that think like that. Just hang on for some time, the happiness will come. They get invested in the circumstance, not, you know, patient for the happiness to come. It's maybe you know people like that, I don't.
The question I had was, even during that time, is it a proper conception to see that this happiness is coming only from Krishna?
Well, the shorter vision is it's coming from one's past good or bad activities. But the bigger vision is everything is coming from Krishna. So, I'm not sure what's behind the question.
Question is like, to see the connection with
a Krishna conscious person sees that, but I what's the purpose behind the question?
Purpose behind the question is to even when going through those happiness and suffering cycle, what should be one's mood?
Oh, good. You look to the eternal. And Krishna is the supreme eternal. So the circumstances that come and go, the indication from Bhagavad Gita is you tolerate it. Tangsta tiksha subharata, matras parshas. You tolerate it. Don't see it as in and of itself valuable, or you've lost your value because now it's in a down cycle. Somehow the worth, my worth, or the worth of life, or something, is down. Rather, withdraw consciousness from the temporary and invest consciousness in the eternal. The distinction I'm making here is, it's not so much seeing, you know, that the bad is coming from Krishna, the good is coming from Krishna. It's, you know, rather, that's true, but rather, everything is coming from Krishna, so let me invest my attention in Krishna rather than monitoring all the temporary things. Like in a dream. Because what's the value of the dream? It's just a dream. So whether it's this part of the dream that looks like nice and that part of the dream that looks like suffering, I want to make sure that I like focus in on the parts of the dream and how they're connected to just its dream. And I deal with it. Like life, we deal with it. We do with this and that. Coming from our past, we're getting this and getting that. But there, the verses 54 and 55 in Sri Brahma Samhita, in sequence, they speak first Krishna, or Brahma speaks about Krishna's equanimity. He deals equally, perfectly, for all living entities, giving them the result of their fruitive activity from Indra down to the Indragopa germ. And then next, he speaks about the dispensation that goes to the devotees. And because of their devotion to him, Krishna intervenes and changes their situation. Now, then the point is being made that whether it's the change of situation from up and down or down to up, or the change of situation from material involvement to detachment from material involvement to the transcendental situation, those opportunities for change are coming from Krishna or Govinda. But to go from material involvement to transcendence, it's special. Krishna shows special mercy to the devotee while he's equal to everyone. And it's a great mystery, Bhaktisiddhanta says. So practicing devotees, preliminarily, not by analysis so much as by detachment through knowledge, this is temporary, so I don't invest so much in it. I deal with it. It's, you know, it's hot, so we, you know, turn the fan on or something, and now it's cold, put a jacket on, it's okay. Now my focus goes to service to Krishna, not just what the temperature is. Is it happy or distressful temperature? And let me remember that the happiness of that temperature, the unhappiness of the temperature, is coming from Krishna. So it's, focus goes to transcendental devotional service at the center. Something else? Yes?
Consciousness to really try to understand and still be respectful. from my side, I can't really take it that
way. I'm not completely clear what you're asking, but I'll respond from what I think you're asking. See beyond the behavior or the mood or the exhibition of conduct and see the person inside, you know, the soul. So someone may be like this, another may be like that, and it's not who they really are, either one or any of them. It's the modes of nature acting, and that's the diseased condition. Whether it's this mode or that mode, it's not the real self, and the real self is beyond. So I can interact with a person according to the conditioning that they're undergoing present, but more deeply see the soul struggling due to being involved in the material nature, seeking happiness, but seeking happiness through material nature and being implicated. And so see the soul and the distinction between the behavior and everything and the living entity. A nice example of this, that's a Christian teaching. Hate the sin, not the sinner. You've heard that one before? So the behavior of somebody may be reprehensible. Like, you know, not nice. And then the person is something other than the behavior. And you do it the other way. Some behavior may be very nice, but the person is something other than that nice behavior. So we can appreciate nice behavior and recognize that bad behavior is bad behavior. But the individual is neither. So, in service, let me interact with that this individual in both ways. And appreciating and encouraging the good behavior and seeing what can be done to help minimize the bad behavior. But at the same time, consider the soul and the needs of the soul and the attraction, ultimately, the attraction of the soul to the Supreme Soul, and fan that spark, because that's going to make the good behavior, bad behavior implication diminish and move to transcendence. The primary goes to the soul. And secondary goes to the, you know, the temporary whatever's going on at the moment. The well-being of the soul is more important. It'll take care of the other. You know, the adosha darshi. Excuse me. The karma darshi. What is it? Karma doshai. Does that address your question? Not exactly.
It addressed everything you did for law. That if I'm in relationship with them, but the concern is that they're representing the dispensation. So if it is something like if this attitude goes on, the behavior goes on, then how is it really doing proper service?
It's disservice.
Yeah. That's the concern.
That's a concern. Now what are you going to do about it? Same. Look at the soul. You know, the concern goes to the condition of the soul, and so you can pray and you can, you know, seek in the mood of service, seek inspiration from super soul. How can I be of some assistance? And you know, maybe you can't, but at least you know, you won't be caught, from our discussion yesterday evening, you won't be caught in a fault-finding mentality. You'll be in, remain in a service mentality, and Krishna may give you some capacity, or you bring to the attention of those that do have the capacity, not in a fault-finding mood, in a service mood. I wish to be of service. Anyway, like that. Anything else?
I have one more question.
Okay.
But I don't know whether it is directly related to this.
Go ahead.
I've been practicing Krishna consciousness a little while. So faith is there, building up. And when this faith is there, and sometimes, you know, my own thing, you know, I might speak some of the things, like, you know, in a bold way. Then if the others are seeing it as they, you know, it's somewhere she is feeling so much of shelter, and it's so strongly it's coming out, the speech. So, and there is a block in the relationship. You know, they might take it back, like, you know, okay, if I'm approaching her, she might speak the strong way. So there is a block in the relationship. I just wanted to correct myself. How can I? But I know that I'm speaking because of that pain, but not in a way that not accepting another person or anything. I don't know how to address this.
She's your wife. Do you understand what she's saying? I don't. Can you translate?
Her way of speaking is straightforward, and she's feeling shelter in the disciplic succession, so she, with that faith, she speaks strongly. I'm straightforward, but some people doesn't like that. You know, it's not like according to the person, changing the tone, that kind of thing is not there, so the other person may take it as she's very straight, right? So they may take it offensive and not
be hurt by that approach.
Right. How to change that?
Well, on the one hand, but on the other hand. So on the one hand, be yourself. You don't have to be something that you're not. On the other hand, in the mood of service, you wish to be an instrument of Krishna in such a way that someone comes closer to Krishna. And if what you're doing or what I'm doing is not helping people come closer to Krishna, it's not having that effect. In fact, it may have the opposite effect, or it's at least not having the intended effect. The intention is good. Krishna accepts the intention. But I, the servant, need to consider how to do the service effectively, because that's the intention of the service. So that's the other side. Be yourself, but seek indication from Krishna how to do your service effectively. I know one devotee that is, you know, like this, and they do a little preamble before they speak. They say, you know, please, you know, please let me explain. My nature is, I don't know how to do things indirectly. speak indirectly, and I'm not gifted like that, or it's just not so. Please pardon me in advance. Please pardon me for just speaking directly or bluntly, because I don't know the art of this other. Maybe, you know, in the course of time I'll learn. So please don't take offense by speaking directly, because I don't know how to do it otherwise. Oh, sure, you can speak directly. Then you speak directly. Because you live here in the Washington area, you get the opportunity to associate with Brajabihari. And if you've noticed, one of the ways that Brajabihari says things is he asks a question. Have you noticed? So, and it's less, I think he's learned it through the depression that he has. Maybe it's part of his nature, but I it seems that it's more prominent. He does this regularly. You know, there's some like heated discussion, and rather than interjecting his opinion, he'll say, well, what does anyone think about this? Or, you know, has anyone thought about this? Or what about this? You know, he's making a statement, but he's putting it as a question. It's less confrontational. Although, you know, it's drawing attention to something. He's good at it. Education-wise, it's also effective in the sense that if people discover something and they articulate it, then they own it. You know what I'm talking about? Huh?
What is articulating?
So let's say, you know, a child, and, you know, they're having a little, you know, temper tantrum, or, you know, something, and you ask a number of questions to get them to the point where they can understand. Yes, if someone were to speak like this to me, or conduct themselves in my presence, I would feel pretty uncomfortable. So it's probably not a good idea if I was to do this. But, you know, they articulate it, or they say it, then they own it. It's like one of the things, here's another example, maybe better example, a more common example. One of the procedures in the Abhaki Vriksha model, when there's new people, one of the procedures is you read a paragraph, and then, you know, then the person who's the facilitator holds the pen, and the pen goes to the paper, and then you ask them, what's the main point of this paragraph? So they go around the room and come up with, you know, with consensus, what's the main point? Okay, does everybody agree this is the main point? And you write it down. Now, they said it, so they own it. Prabhupada said it. But because they said it, now they own it. And then they can say it, you know, sometime in the future. It helps them understand what, you know, how to read Prabhupada's books, and then how to express what's in Prabhupada's books. But, you know, then the message is not just you get the idea. Whereas if you give the class, so you read the purport, you say, the main message of this paragraph is da 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 da. Well, they don't own it. They're gonna consider if they want to buy one or not. But if they say it, they own it. Yeah, we agree. That's the main point. Okay, what are the secondary points? They say it, they get it. And how does this paragraph fit together with that paragraph? What's the message of the whole purport? What's the message of this section of Bhagavad Gita? What's the message of the chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Main message. That's the main message. Okay. So same with someone's, you know, conduct. I'm really angry at... Really? What, you just ask a bunch of questions rather than saying, you know, this is the mode of passion, my dear friend. And you, because of the mode of passion, you're feeling frustration. Here's the verse in Bhagavad Gita. You're saying it, and they're going to decide if they, you know, agree with it. But if they can help them discover, where, you know, where is this feeling coming from? If the circumstance, if you're in a different circumstance, you think that this wouldn't exist at all? Or is there some other cause? Is it something that, anyway. Anything else? Yes.
There is ups and downs.
Mode of nature has its ups and downs.
So, like for example, if you go to, I'm just giving an analogy here, if you go to a graveyard, the mood is different.
Right.
If you go to a temple, the mood is different.
Oh, that's a fact.
So,
good example.
So, the environment where we are is also changing the mood. And sometimes I experience, if in the same environment, the mood also affected, like for no reason, like things goes down, and like for no reason, like I feel happy, and like I clearly understood you said when that happens, when some things are not working because of the modes of nature, engage yourself in the devotional service. So is it something, even like when I try to chant, for example, that is one of the service, that is not helping, like because for no reason, not because of the environmental condition, but like, you know, internally I feel that type of a mood, and like I'm not getting the taste, even that moment, like, oh, I want to overcome this, I want to chant.
So what, I don't get your point. What's your point? You're asking a question, making a comment, or what's going on?
In that condition, like I'm not able to chant means like what we should do, that was my question. Like how to understand that condition.
Continue chanting, that's what you should do. See the ups and the downs is temporary. That unsteadiness, the sine curve, has to do with my implication in matter. It's the mind and the modes of nature. And it's not me. So withdraw and invest. You don't place particular value in this or that. You strive. The five factors of action. You strive or you endeavor to do what Krishna says to do. You tolerate and invest. Invest consciousness in being attentive. And continue and continue. Abhyasa yoga yuktena. That's what you do. Don't place value in the temporary. you know, the particular configuration of matter at the moment is this, and I'm very closely monitoring it. Withdraw attention from that and invest, because from the spiritual well-being, the material well-being will follow. You know, look at the bigger trajectory of things, and when there's spiritual well-being, the material well-being follows. So the be in the moment phrase is the eternal moment, not the temporary moment, the temporary phases of time, and what time does to bring things about and to destroy things. Be in the eternal moment. Be with Krishna. Bring your thoughts to Krishna. That's what you should do. You tolerate the other. It's like that because of my past material activity, my material consciousness. I'm reaping this temporary thing is the result, I'm reaping the result of my past involvements in ignorance. Oh, let me move on to transcendence. If there's something I need to deal with, I'll deal with it. But my main attention is going to Krishna, to transcendence, to my eternal relationship with Krishna. Enough of this forgetfulness and struggling. Trying to make it good instead of bad, trying to make it up instead of down, trying to make it, you know, pleasure instead of pain. Struggling. Let me go to Krishna. Does that help?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
One has a tendency that, okay, this thing I can't do, then how can we work on that? Because is that knowing whatever...
Depends on what the thing is that you can't do. You want to, like, you know, create a universe, maybe that's something you just resign yourself to, you can't do.
Yeah, but even the small things like, say, the service, we have to lift a heavy thing, say, okay, I can't do this. Like that.
Well, my answer is the same. It depends on what it is that you feel you can't do. Like, here's one that one might say, I can't do. It's like control the mind. I can say, I can't do. But one can do. You know, lift that piece of furniture by myself, maybe I can't do. So it depends.
So is that like... My question is focusing mainly on what my strengths are and my weaknesses
are. Sure.
Sure.
Well, focus mainly on what your strengths are. And then from that position of strength, select some things that are doable, prove the weaknesses. That's a standard procedure. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.